You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Final hour on this Tuesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Seton's been holding off all morning long, teasing me. When is he going to tell me? What's his opinion? Hamilton.
Yeah, I don't know if you're... Whenever you're ready, bud.
Hamilton, the musical. It's available on Disney Plus, I believe. McLovin has seen it. Well, we actually went to the play.
Yeah, I saw it at the Public, actually.
Oh.
I didn't, but that's like the big like honor. If you saw it before it made Broadway, then you're like, you're in.
Yeah.
But you saw the original cast.
Yes.
I never saw the original cast.
Well, remember when I went to see, what was the play that was 8 hours long?
Oh, yes. What the heck was
it? It was for like, there were people there that were playing it, like Great Gatsby or something like that.
Yes, it was. And Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire were there. And we're in a real small theater down in the Village. And they read a book. They read the entire book. That was the play. And it was 8 hours long. And you get there and then they have a dinner break. And then you come back. Now, DiCaprio left right before the dinner. Like, when the dinner break happened, he didn't come back. Tobey Maguire came back. What were they? Were they reading The Great Gatsby? Is that? Yeah, it was called Gats. That's right. And it was an eight-hour play. And my wife said, oh, hey, this is going to be so different. Now, so different means that's trouble. Oh, it's so different.
And as opposed to great.
Yeah. And I go, well, what are the reviews? Oh, the reviews are great. So what do they do? They read The Great Gatsby. So, like, is there any bombs, any explosions, any sex? Like, is there anything? No. They just like read the book. And I go, okay. And I signed up for it. And 8 hours later, that gave me a lot of street cred with my wife. Like, I had some credits built up there after that. But I remember seeing DiCaprio there, and he had a Cuban cigar, and he wasn't smoking it, but he was holding on to it. And then Tobey Maguire, and they were giggling through the whole thing. And then they, of course, were going to do their Great Gatsby movie. I don't know.
How did it end up for Gatsby in the end? Did he make it this time?
He did not. Yes, Todd.
Was your wife forthcoming about the duration of this whole deal?
She
spelled it out. There's going to be an eight-hour project.
Yeah. But... You know, it was one of those where, and you learn, it's negotiations when you're married. You're like, okay, all right, I'll take a bullet on this one. All right, yeah. I mean, it was 8 hours, but it was a great performance, but it was still 8 hours. All right, so a moment of truth here, Seton O'Connor. I've asked you if you would take time to watch Hamilton.
Yeah. So I watched it last night. And I should probably say just up front that I've never been to a Broadway play. I don't go to musicals. So I'm not very well versed in any of this.
Okay.
And so I'm probably not really educated enough on the medium to understand why Hamilton is so great.
Uh-oh.
Because it's exactly what I thought it was going to be. And I think I felt very validated about my impression of it.
What did you think it was going to be?
The Constitution is the thing that we're talking about. His name is Alexander Hamilton. All around the world again. Going there and back again. Like, this
Whitley,
is...
Whitley Washington.
Yeah. I don't know. Need me to begin again. Alexander Hamilton. Yeah, it's just not my thing. I'm sorry.
No. You validated that you don't know anything about Broadway.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, and maybe I don't want to then. If that's the best there is, I don't want to go there.
And that's good. That means more orchestra seating for me. Did your wife like it?
No.
Okay.
No.
How about your son?
He was furious at me that we wasted 3 hours. Actually, to be fair, I only did about 2 hours. I got an hour in and realized there was still another 2 hours to go and fast forwarded to closer to the end to be like, well, this is probably where the good stuff is.
Wow.
It's just not my thing. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
No, I get it. It's not for everybody.
I'm definitely, there's not a lot of people, because as soon as I tweeted that we were watching it or something, like, it's going to change your life. Oh, I'm so jealous you get to see it for the first time right now. Like, all of this doesn't just
maybe
not
if
it.
You saw it in the theater, if you saw it on Broadway?
Maybe. That might be.
But that, you know, maybe not. Maybe you would go, oh my God.
Yeah, and you know, there's some that, there's some that I could do. Like I said, I've never been to a musical in person. I've never done that kind of thing. So, and I think that just trying to be fair, like it might just not be my medium.
Yeah,
it might not be my like the thing that I enjoy.
Your milieu.
My milieu.
Milieu. Yeah. Yes, Paul.
See, and I have a question. Can you not like something but appreciate the creativity of it?
So there's the people are super talented. There's no doubt about that. Especially the guy who played Aaron Burr.
Yeah.
Is just remarkable. And some of the other characters, I thought, like, man, like this person.
That's Leslie Odom.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. He's amazing. He's really, really great. Yeah. You know, some of the female leads there that played his wife, like really, really talented. It's just not like there's something about like the movements and the way everything is sort of done that it's just like that's not it. For me,
that's okay.
Yeah, but super talented.
But you tried, and that's all I ask.
Definitely,
that's all I ask. You tried, Paul. You gonna watch it?
I think I will. I've seen
even after that review.
Oh, I'm somewhere in between. I appreciate. I saw a rap history rap years ago. It was called. You remember the Comedy of Errors? Shakespeare, the Comedy of Errors. There was a group that did it in the late 90s in New York, and they did it. It was called the Bombity of Errors, like the Bombity of Errors. And they did Shakespeare with rap. And I saw it in person. It was fantastic. Mm. Now, I think it was the experience that was good. I don't know if I'd watch it again, but I'll check out Hamilton.
Okay. Todd, do I even bother to ask?
I liked musicals and Broadway shows more when I was younger, when I was going to see like Annie and Grease and Peter Pan. But as I've gotten older and people are just talking and all of a sudden they break out in song, it becomes to me a little more corny in my older age. You would think maybe it would be the opposite, that you'd appreciate it more. But I think I enjoyed Broadway back in the little kid days. Now it's like, I don't see myself watching
that's
it.
That's a long note.
Yeah, I don't see myself tuning into that.
That's a, yeah, McLeod.
I find myself now wanting to go back and see the other great musicals in person. Because what I got to admit, there was a point where I was like, ah, go to a musical is not super macho, you know, but now the kids like the musicals and the music's pretty, you know, it's iconic and famous. Like, I don't know. Have you been to a lot of musicals? I know you guys go to the theater once in a while.
I went to Les Mis.
Yeah, that's the music from Les Mis. The soundtrack's awesome Les Mis. I've never seen it.
But I had never been to a Broadway show. And my wife, we were dating at the time, and we went to see Brighton Beach Memoirs. And, you know, Neil Simon was one of the brilliant people in how he could write dialogue. And Matthew Broderick was playing in the starring role. And we watched all three. And I'm trying to think what they are. Brighton Beach Memoirs, Biloxi Blues, and then there was one other. But I just thought Neil Simon had this unbelievable cadence in how to write a play. And you have the, you know, the actors being able to deliver it. And I was mesmerized by it. Like, and it's live in front of you. Like when you see a movie, it's different. You're watching somebody doing a play. It's like somebody is doing something athletically. That's the way I view it. You know, the Book of Mormon, it's right there in front of you that they're doing this every single day or night. And that performance, and I'm moved by those things. When I see somebody do something live, it alters something in me. Yeah, Paul.
I saw a play years ago. It was in London, and it was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the movie with Jack Nicholson, and Christian Slater played the lead role for a couple weeks. And it was fantastic because Christian Slater, Jack Nicholson, that's not a big stretch, but he really nailed it.
I saw The Phantom of the Opera on my honeymoon 33 years ago, original cast. And I remember,
big deal.
I know, original cast. And I just remember we had the last two seats in the last row all the way in the corner. I couldn't stand up, and we're in London, and it was unbelievable. And that's one of those where I went, I don't want to go to see Phantom of the Opera. My wife goes, you need to go see Phantom of the Opera. I go, okay, just got married, honeymoon. Yes, dear. Got in there, banged my head on the ceiling because the way the theater house, the roof was, it was really low in the very corners. And I banged my head and I'm like, God. And then all of a sudden, is it Michael Crawford? Was he the, and Sarah Brightman, I think? It was pretty good. Pretty good stuff. All right. Let's see. I've been fascinated with Cam Newton, his hype video. And we played a little bit of that last hour. He was also on the bigger picture. with OBJ, Todd Gurley, and Victor Cruz. Here's Cam Newton talking about all the teams that passed on him this offseason.
We have to talk about the elephant in the room. And it's like, you know you who you coming after. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, great. Yeah. What he was, what he is great. Needs no even talking about it. But one thing about it, though, you Coach McDaniels, you able to call some stuff that you ain't never been able to call now. All right, you know, and I told, hey, you getting a dog? You getting one of these ticked off dogs too? That's like, bro. And I'm looking at the schedule. I'm like, who we play? That team passed on me. Okay, that team passed on me. They could have game and got me. They hollered at me. I even asked my agents, like, hey, yo, so what's up with? Nah, man. The agent act like he was like, well, we gotta wait till it was this all type of. You know, issues. So I'm like, bro, you know what? I'm gonna take this time with the COVID. I said, I'm gonna commit to myself.
So Cam Newton talking about following Tom Brady and all the teams that passed on him. That's courtesy of the bigger picture. I like this Cam. I wanna see what it looks like when it all rolls out. Get him in uniform. Get him in action. And see how he plays. But he got a chip on his shoulder, and. I hope that's the only thing he's got on his shoulder is a chip, because I'd still like to know how healthy he's going to be. I think he's got a chip in his shoulder. He's got chips in his shoulder. That's part of the problem.
He should have them removed and put on top.
I've had those chips in my shoulder. They wouldn't let me keep them when they took them out. Like all the surgeries, I was like, can I have the cartilage? Can I have the meniscus? You don't get to keep them. I should be able to keep them, but I was told that there were some laws or something where there. And then, you know, the doctor's like, well, why would you want to keep them? I go, they're mine. Like, how many people are able to show things that were inside them and put it on? It's content. I'd be able to put it on display here in the man cave. Like, that's surgery in 04. That's surgery in 08. It'd be like Dr. Frankenstein. It'd be jars all over the place of all the things that I've been through. There's my rotator cuff over there.
We could throw in like an intestine of Fritzy's, you know, like a put one next to there. Yeah, maybe some other stuff from other guys.
Yeah. Well, they took out some of my knee and then they put in a replacement knee. So.
When they put in a replacement knee, I saw a video once. Is it like a metal titanium buffer between the two bones?
I think so.
You don't know?
I didn't. Paulie, I got to the point where I had so many surgeries on my knee. I just said, just make sure I can walk. That's all. I didn't care.
You didn't ask what
I didn't care.
What properties you're putting in your body?
I didn't care. I just said, all right, whatever. I went in to see my doctor, and I'd been having all this pain, and I said, he goes, well, you could always do a replacement. I go, when? He goes, well, I could do it by the end of the month. I go, all right, let's do it. And I go home and I said, I'm having my knee replaced. My wife goes, oh, okay. Well, when? I go, at the end of the month. She goes, you're kind of rushing into it a little bit, aren't you? And I go, not really. I've been dealing with this knee since I was, 14 or 15. And went and did it, got the rehab, and haven't looked back. By the way, if anybody ever thinks about doing a replacement knee, do it. Like if you're at that stage, do it. I wouldn't do both at the same time. People will do both knees, and I will say it's the most pain I ever felt in all my surgeries in my knee the first 3 weeks. But I'm saying do it. but it's you can get 3 weeks of pain and then not have any pain, or you can continue to have that chronic pain there. But the 3 weeks of pain, that was bad stuff. Some phone calls here, and then we'll take a break. Jason in North Carolina joins us on the program. Hi, Jason. What's on your mind today?
Thanks, Dan. First time, long time. I'm 6'2", 215. I wanted to bring the discussion back to Hamilton and specifically.
Okay.
I, like Seton, am very resistant to Hamilton. I've not seen it, and I care not to. And I was wondering if Seton has seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show, because that's kind of a more acceptable, maybe young person musical, and I couldn't stand it. Seton, did you see it and did you like it?
Yeah, I've seen that movie for sure. It's almost like a, yeah, like a rite of passage kind of thing that at a certain age you're supposed to watch that. And it's all right. You know, I like that there's the idea of the whole experience around it, that you can go see it at midnight and people will throw things at the at a certain time or whatever. Yep. I think that's pretty cool. And I'm not really anti all musicals. I'm granted I didn't see them on Broadway, but I liked Chicago the movie. And I liked, you know, there's some that I've seen that I was like, oh, man, that was really good. You mm-hmm. know,
thank but, you, Jason. Yeah. Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's interactive and, you know, there's rock and roll involved in it. Great characters involved mm-hmm. in it. You know, it's campy, you know, but you have to kind of gear up for that campiness. Yes.
And I really like that it felt like it was really pushing boundaries of what people were comfortable with. That I really enjoyed that a lot.
Nathan in Wisconsin joins us on the program. Good morning, Nathan. Hey, Nathan.
Hello.
Hey, Nathan.
Hi.
What can I do for you, Nathan?
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think fans will attend 10 NFL games this season?
Do I think what?
Fans will attend 10 NFL games this season.
Well, thank you, Nathan. And I don't think so. I just... Not the start. I mean, how about we just get to games? That's I'd be happy with just games. But thank you for the phone call, Nathan. Yeah, I'd be happy for just games to be played. I don't need to have fans to enjoy these games. Now, do they add certainly to a college atmosphere? Absolutely. But it's not a deal breaker for me. I just want games to be played where players feel safe and you feel like it's repeatable, that this week will be the same as next week. That's my biggest concern, is college football, pro football, baseball. I don't know how repeatable all of this is going to be. The NBA, it's going to be Groundhog's Day for everybody there. Wake up, you're going to be doing this. Certain things you can do, certain things you can't do. And that's the way it's going to be in that bubble. But I think the NBA, you know, this prototype, and it probably only works, you know, hockey's trying to do bubbles in a couple of different cities, and hopefully they're able to accomplish that, but it's hard to be able to do this because the players being outside with a lot of these sports, the NBA played inside, hockey played inside. Can you kind of cordon off everybody for their own safety? And it feels like once you get in that bubble and the number of tests that you're going to have to go through, and it feels like the media might be tested more than the players. And we talked to Joe Varden, who covers the NBA for The Athletic. He's locked in his room. He's doing wind sprints from the bathroom to the front door. Can you call them wind sprints? I don't know if those are A sprints and there's no wind. Yes, Eden.
And he said that he did almost 2 miles. He went back and forth that 30 feet for 20 minutes and went 2 miles.
You imagine being the person underneath him? Stop it, Joe! All right, we'll take a break. More phone calls coming up. It's 20 after the hour. We'll talk about the Washington Redskins, who are putting to bed. They're retiring the Redskins. We just don't know when they're going to bring us their new nickname. Is that the fault of the Redskins? 20 after the hour. This is the Dan Patrick Show. Maverick irons using artificial intelligence. Callaway's done it again. The first irons designed by artificial intelligence. And they didn't do it just for one iron. Every loft, every iron, flash, face, cup, uniquely designed by artificial intelligence, completely maximizes distance. Played over the weekend. And while I was really good and really bad, I think I had 8 or 9 pars. And I won't tell you what I did on the other holes. But when you hit these shots correctly, because see, that's what amateurs, weekend warriors, we don't know what it feels like or sounds like because the pros do it differently. And when you hit these irons correctly, and they're very forgiving, all of a sudden you go, well, that was different. The Maverick irons, get a set of them. Go to CallawayGolf.com. Callaway, the number one irons in golf. They also have the Maverick driver, Odyssey putter. You're going to love the chrome soft golf balls. Callaway has all of it under one roof. CallawayGolf.com. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Multiple reports the Cowboys and Dak Prescott aren't close to a long-term deal, according to Calvin Watkins of the Dallas Morning News. Cowboys are, quote, not close to inking a long-term deal with their quarterback. Situation could change before the deadline. That's tomorrow, according to Calvin Watkins. A source said Sunday afternoon, Cowboys not close to reaching a multi-year contract with Prescott, and he makes $31.4 million franchise tag, if no deal by deadline. I guess it, you know, it still comes back to years that he wants to be able to hit the open market before he's 30. And it's a 4-year deal is what he wants. Cowboys are looking at a 5-year deal. And apparently there's been no discussions between the two since March. Now that Washington's moving on from the Redskins, one problem is resolved. Now it's time to address another, maybe a number of other issues. And ones that aren't as important as the team nickname, but this is a franchise that's struggled. And it's one thing to be bad, but, you know, what they've done under Daniel Snyder is, you know, historically bad. Early in the 2000s, they went on this run of paying high-priced free agents. Remember that? That didn't work out well. The strategy was a disaster. Guys came to D.C. They were interested in collecting a paycheck. Then I think they're more interested in that than playing football. And then they finally had some hope. 2011, they draft RG3. He won Rookie of the Year. He was great. But then they forced him to play too early on an injured knee, and he was never the same. And the team's approach to their players' health has been a major concern. And now you have a new coach in Ron Rivera. Maybe a new name is going to bring new momentum, a breath of new life into a team that used to be a regular season contender. And maybe... maybe they can figure this out. But you always start at the top. And Ron Rivera is a proven coach, but I start at the top because it all trickles down from there. And if you don't trust management, you don't trust ownership, then usually that it's rare when you can sort of be, you know, make up for what deficiencies you have with ownership or the front office. It's really hard to do that. Like, in spite of them, we're still pretty good. You look at these franchises, the Blue Bloods, and you have ownership that allows, you know, people in those positions, GMs, coaches, scouts, to do their jobs. It's when they think they're smarter than everybody else, that's usually when you find trouble. Yeah, Paul.
Remember about 3 weeks ago, we did a segment or two on the owners that would their fan base would like to replace them. And Daniel Snyder is one of the top people we mentioned, Jim Dolan with the Knicks. And it was more about on-field performance. And with Daniel Snyder, there's some off-field stuff. Remember charging for different things. But a lot of the Redskins fan base liked Daniel Snyder the past few years for being defiant with the name. I think that's one of the things that, you know, I don't think it's off color to say, is that a lot of people, Washington Redskins hardcore fans, wanted to keep the name and liked the defiance of Daniel Snyder. Now he doesn't even have that.
But even if that's why you like a team, not, or your owner,
yeah,
that's not a good reason why. Hey,
not at all.
He doesn't want to give up on the Redskins. Okay. I'd rather that he gave up on the Redskins, but he was an unbelievable owner,
right,
and we had a good product on the field. Because I don't even know if they know what they have with Dwayne Haskins. Okay. It feels like they have some pieces, and you're not sure if they're like glass half empty or half full.
They were 32nd in offense and 27th in defense last year. The worst since ever, basically. I've got to go back 40 years to find it. They were this bad.
Yeah, so what are you building on? You have to build on everything there. And you have a young quarterback. You do have some wide receivers. But you're still looking at that team and you're going, all right, who are they and what are they? And, you know, the NFC East used to be so potent, you know, with the Giants. Don't know who they are, what they are. Feels like the Giants have a better handle. Daniel Snyder feels like he's on his way to being a good successor for Eli Manning. Saquon Barkley, yes, we can argue that they never should have taken him number two overall. But are they going to be? I don't know what they have in their coach. I have no idea. And this is where the Cowboys should be pouncing, and they haven't. And the Eagles were all banged up, and the Eagles somehow won that division last year. And there is no reason for that. If I said Dak Prescott's going to throw 30 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, and you're going to go 8-8. Now, we can put a lot of blame on Jason Garrett. But I got to put some blame. Like, there's room to go around with the blame there. But 8-8? And your quarterback throws for 30 touchdowns, 5,000 yards? There's some issues. Yeah, McClellan.
The Redskins also have that problem where if 35 guys are injured by week 7, yeah. I remember Trent Williams sued the medical staff.
Yeah.
There's something wrong.
Yeah, but why isn't Dallas formidable? Even if it feels like Dallas's offense... And stay with me here. Dallas's offense can be a very, very high elite offense. Like a Kansas City Ravens offense that they have a great offensive line and they have good weapons, good running back, and Dak is a good quarterback, bordering on maybe a very good or great quarterback here. And your defense just has to be good enough. We saw that with Kansas City. Just be good enough. At big moments. Why can't Dallas beat Kansas City? And I know Mahomes is, you know, different than Dak Prescott. But if I look at the supporting cast, Dallas has a pretty good team on offense. Now, you don't have Kelce and you don't have Tyreek Hill. But you do have some pretty good complementary parts. And your offensive line is better than Kansas City's. And you got Zeke Elliott. But they're not even close. They outscored the opposition by 100 points last year. And you went 8-8. Yeah, McClellan.
Maybe they should be more like the Ravens and just run and defense teams because they also have these stars on defense.
But I don't know. They have stars. They have names on defense. I don't know if they're stars. I think you become a name because you're on Dallas. And then we assume you're a star because you play for Dallas.
But DeMarcus Lawrence... Leighton Vander Esch, Jalen Smith. You're right. I don't know. They seem pretty awesome when you see the highlights. They're amazing.
It feels like they have more talent on their defense than Kansas City does.
Yeah.
Like marquee players. So what is it? And maybe it's Mike McCarthy. Maybe. But is he going to help Dak Prescott throw for what? 5,000 yards is a great season. 30 touchdowns. Is he going to throw for 35 touchdowns? Okay. Is that going to make a difference here? Giants aren't going to be where the Cowboys are, and the Eagles maybe are still considered a better team. They shouldn't be, but it feels like that. Yeah, McClellan.
Coaching.
You think it comes down to that?
What did Shane Irving always yell about the Cowboys? He said they needed to run the ball more, right? He was always like, slow the game down, run the ball more, I think.
Well, I can't have that defense out there. You know, when the Cowboys went 13-3, it felt like they controlled the clock and then they had their defense out there, but not exposed. And some of these teams put their defenses out there. They get exposed. They can't. They're not a formidable defense. So you need to limit the number of times they're on the field. That was a knock with Kansas City. So they scored too quickly. Whereas the Ravens would control the clock. And that defense, when that defense got on the field, I mean, the Ravens were probably the best team in football last year. And, you know, they looked past Tennessee and they got burned there. But, you know, the Ravens, probably both sides of the ball, were the best team in football last year, in my opinion. But that doesn't mean you win, obviously. Yeah, Paul.
The Cowboys outscored their opponents last season by 113 points and were 8-8. The Packers outscored their opponents by a total of 63 points and were 13-3.
And you go back to these discussions about Dak Prescott and his contract. And I said at the time, if you're going to eventually pay him now. Because it'll cost you less if you wait. And I give Dak Prescott credit because he bet on himself. And the longer this has gone, the more money he is going to make. If you go back at the beginning and, man, I thought that they were going to sign him at the beginning of the season. I was told they're signing him. Over the weekend, they were going to be signing him. And didn't happen. And then didn't happen. And then we've heard nothing from Jerry Jones. He went radio silent. And now you got D-Day tomorrow. But it feels like both sides probably know where the other side stands on all of this. And they could have prevented this problem by just paying him. Because now, if I'm Dak Prescott, I'll bet on myself again. Because Jerry Jones has put in place, it's not like he's playing for the Redskins. He's playing for the Cowboys. And Jerry loves to have that offense. And he's going to make sure he's got weapons. And he paid for the, you draft CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott, offensive line. All the pieces are in place for Dak to have another successful year. And it's going to cost you even more money. That's why I didn't understand the logic. And Jerry has been in so many negotiations that you think he would have the upper hand or know what to do. And Dak Prescott's people, his representatives, they said, don't cave in. Don't cave, you know, bet on yourself. And he did. Yeah, Paul.
If you go to ESPN.com, they have the list about the NFL teams and the standings from last year. You know, Oakland Raiders and New York Giants. It just says Washington, and there's blank. There's no logo next to it. There's nothing.
People have been told to scrub the name.
NFL.com has not yet.
Oh, they haven't?
I have not. I checked it 5 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was told that people are being informed to scrub that nickname. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm blaming Daniel Snyder for... Who sent out those possible names? Because that's where somebody trademarked all these potential nicknames here. And you would think if you go, hey, if we ever have to change the name, then let's look at the possibilities of names that we would be using. And let's trademark those. Because it feels like there was public discourse on this. And then somebody goes, anybody got these names?
Like to-do list. Announce we're changing name. Trademark all name possibilities. And then, what's that? What order?
Yeah. Wait, I forgot. Oh, I had it in reverse order. And so you put them out there. I would have thought somebody would have gobbled them up. Not the case. Although when I first started this show and I left the mothership, I didn't trademark danpatrick.com. Yeah.
See. But to be fair, they're still learning lessons at that phase of development for this show.
Yeah, that's when, you know, my boss was like, we got a trademark danpatrick.com. And I'm thinking, God, it feels a little late. And then we, of course, ran into somebody who trademarked danpatrick.com. I had to call and do a voice message.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So, like, his settlement was a phone call from Dan Patrick?
Well, no, I think I had to. There might have been some other things involved, but yeah, I had to be nice, just say thank you, and could I have it back? Yes, Todd.
If you had all these Washington names trademarked, what number would you have in mind for not holding it hostage anymore and giving it to the Washington NFL franchise?
I don't, if, you know, the guy, I guess, is from Alexandria, Virginia. So I'm going to guess season tickets forever. No, four season tickets. How's
if they
that?
Wanted that name bad enough, could you expect them to pay you a couple $100,000, $1 million? I wouldn't even know where to start. If they want that name and you're trademarking it, you're kind of holding them in a really good spot there. And you know this team has millions of dollars.
Yeah, but then they could say, well, this guy is holding on to this nickname that we want to use. So we got to come up with another one. I mean, Daniel Snyder doesn't strike me as he's going to be going, hey, here you go. Can't wait to get that new nickname here. I think that's where you have lawyers and all of a sudden lawyers get involved in it. But I don't know what it's worth. It's only worth what you're willing to pay for it. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, I was going to say Daniel Snyder could just say, okay, we're going to call ourselves the Red Tails.
Yeah.
Or DC Red Tails, and get that website, and you click on it. There's ways to put a different word for your website and get there, and they'll get around this guy. This guy's got to be careful. He's got to make his deal now and try to get something decent.
NFL teams who finished 500 or worse while outscoring the opposition by at least 100 points. Alex Trebek, your answers are the 1950 Philadelphia Eagles, the 1989 Bengals, and your 2019 Dallas Cowboys.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day.
All three of those teams finished 500. That's one of those stats if you're Jerry Jones and you go, how did that happen? We had a great offense. My quarterback played great. And we finished 8-8 in a division that had the Giants and the Redskins and a banged-up Philadelphia team. Well, thank God I picked the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl because I was going to pick the Cowboys to play the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I picked the Eagles. But I was so bullish on the boys. And I had a scout who said, that's fool's gold, man. I go, but they got it. They got the line. They got the he goes, fool's gold. I said, all right, well, I'll take the Eagles. Yeah, Paul.
Cowboys were 6-4 around November 17th. Then they lost New England, Buffalo, Chicago, 3 in a row. All close games. All one touchdown, about less than 10-point games.
Buffalo was Thanksgiving?
Right.
That was really, that game told me everything about both of those franchises. Buffalo was real, and Dallas wasn't. Because my bold prediction that Buffalo was winning 10 games last year, and I thought, I can't see them beating Dallas in Dallas. And they went in there, and they were the better team. All right, we'll take a break. Close up shop after this. What we learn, what's in store tomorrow. We'll try to accomplish all of that next year on The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. What we learn and what's in store tomorrow. I think the actor Jason Sudeikis is going to join us. He did Hall Pass, Horrible Bosses.
He crushes in Hall Pass.
Yes, very funny. So Jason Sudeikis will join us on the program tomorrow. And Todd working on a variety of things right now. Maybe Joe Theismann is going to join us as well. Is that right, Todd?
That is correct, actually.
Okay, all right. It's National Tape Measure Day.
Yes, National French Fry Day, Tape Measure Day, and Mac and Cheese Day.
Ooh.
Well, he's a big tape measure guy.
Yeah.
I am. Yeah, I use a tape measure often.
So you just do you have one that clips onto your belt?
No, I have one though that's usually I'll leave it in the pantry kitchen.
No, so.
Yeah.
Just do you do it because you need to do it or you're just kind of are OCD about bringing out your tape measure?
Well, I'm sort of we have a lot of things that have to be done around my house. And so I'm sort of always like, oh yeah, what about this? Kind of like shiny things, you know, like, oh yeah, we have to fix that. I wonder how big that is.
You know what I do though? I guesstimate. So I won't measure. I'll go, yeah, that feels, yeah, it looks like it's about 3.5 feet, something around there. And all of a sudden you bring something home and you're like, nope, that's 4 feet. Nope, I missed that by that much. Yeah, Paulie.
The biggest Groundhog's Day thing I have at my house is I have the tape measure out, you know, and I had the kids always say, hey, can we help? Can we help? I'm like, don't let it go. Don't let it go because you want to put the thing down. Sometimes I don't put the thing down. At least once every month, they'll let the thing go and it'll snap back and almost take one of my fingers off.
This day in sports history, any more fallout from the mayonnaise? McLovin, did you survive social media?
It's amazing. It's very polarizing. It's 50-50. Some people hate it. Some people love it.
I have no use for mayo. None.
Even so, you never order a turkey club sandwich. No. Without mayonnaise, that is as dry as Sahara dust.
No, you put mustard on it.
Wow.
I put mustard on my turkey.
But not a turkey club. You got a turkey club with mustard?
Yes.
Bit dry? No.
Wasn't there something called Dijonaise, and it was a mix of Dijon mustard and mayonnaise? Maybe you could sort of ease in with a little Dijonaise.
Surf and turf it.
Yeah, I love Dijonaise.
Dijonaise.
See? You got to add something to make mayonnaise good.
I think you just like pronouncing it, McLovin.
Yeah, although I have to be honest, I don't like when I get stuck with just Dijon mustard as an option. I like to see a stone ground or maybe a classic yellow in the mix. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your favorite
French's?
Is.
French's?
There's a lot of room in the mustard
category. Paulie, this day in sports history.
It's a pretty good one. In 1969, U.S. President Richard Nixon signed a baseball from the Baseball Hall of Fame that had signatures of 9 previous U.S. presidents.
Hmm.
That'd be pretty cool.
Did anybody sign it after that?
It's a great question.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Find out tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay.
That's about it.
That's there, it?
This is a very dry time of year for sports history. It's always like Bo Jackson hit a home run in the All-Star game. I think Shaq was traded to Miami this day in sports history. That's a pretty big one.
Yeah. And then Fritzy had his scoreboard and...
I'm sorry, that's the snoreboard.
Snoreboard. Snoreboard.
42-24.
Yeah, so we had Jackie Robinson. They changed the Rookie of the Year award to the Jackie Robinson Award?
Correct. Okay. This date in history, I think in 87, and then 24 was Ken Griffey Jr., All-Star Game MVP, this date in history.
Okay. Was it this day in history when Reggie Jackson hit the light tower at Tiger Stadium?
It was this week. I know.
It was definitely, I think, in the last couple of days for sure.
Well, this is when the All-Star Game is played, so
I'm assuming. No one's going to check.
That was one of those moments when, you know, you're a kid and you're watching the All-Star Game and, you know, because the camera couldn't follow, Reggie would have hit it out of Tiger Stadium. And it was, and no one ever got cheated on a Reggie Jackson swing, like, especially Reggie. Like, he'd corkscrew himself into the ground, but that ball hit the, and then they showed it, that where it hit in the stadium. And I just remember being, because Reggie had the those Oakland A's uniforms and had the vest there, had the white shoes. And Reggie went up there, and Reggie went up there to do one thing, and that was to hit the ball as far as he could. You know, certain guys like that, you know, I wonder what Reggie would be like in today's game, because it was an all or nothing with Reggie. And he hit some bombs. But that went at Tiger Stadium. That was a whole lot of fun. Was that off Doc Ellis? Does that sound right? The Pittsburgh Pirate, D-O-C-K, Doc Ellis?
I think so. I think you're right about that.
Thank you, Todd. Final results of the poll question.
If you could pay one of these guys $200 million for 5 years, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, or Carson Wentz, 64% Deshaun, Carson second place.
All right. Let's go around the room on what we learned on the program. What's it?
I was getting ready for what I learned.
Oh, okay.
Like, I learned that Bruce Smith yells penis when he panics.
Yeah, he said, you know, when you got a buzzer and you're on the clock, and of course, that's what came to mind. When
Hammer.
He...
No, penis. The best.
Todd, what did you learn on today's program?
You get the feeling the Cowboys still aren't sold on what they have with Dak Prescott.
I don't know. And then I've had people say, well, why are they offering him a five-year deal? I think they're trying to get something that's a little more team-friendly there. I guess. McLevin, what did you learn?
Bruce Smith came up with another option. He said wrench. We gave him a lot
yes.
of credit.
Yeah, you got it right. Wrench. Paulie, what did you learn?
NBA writer Joe Varden not getting swole with any yard time.
What did I learn, Todd?
Joe Varden says of the Clippers, not the Lakers, the team to beat in the Western Conference.
We're faced with new legal challenges, and legal help is here for you with LegalZoom.com. Network of independent attorneys give you advice whenever you need it. And since they're a law firm, you don't have to leave your home. Don't charge you by the hour. LegalZoom.com for more information. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on the Dan Patrick Show.